Hello, I'm your host, Angelina Jenis, and this is the CXcast. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the CXcast. And welcome back to two of my favorite guests. First, Sue Doyle, senior analyst on the CX team. Hey, Sue.
Hi, Angelina.
And AJ Joplin, senior analyst, also on the CX team. Hey, AJ.
Hello.
So you may not know this about our analysts, but they actually do collaborate sometimes. And that's what we're here to talk about. Not the collaboration in and of itself, but you will hear as they talk to me and talk to each other, how they collaborated on a collection of tools for CX leaders, CX teams. And when I say tools, I'm going to throw it to Sue to define, because tools mean a thing at Forrester.
Yeah, I guess the best way to say tool, to define tools, and we have many different types of tools, is it's a way for us to interact with our clients. It's not just reading research or listening to a webinar or a podcast like we have here. It's a way that we can work together. So it's a template or some type of construct or framework where we can roll up our sleeves together and customize the experience for clients.
Okay, so it's like an extra guide in the experience. To use the experience principle, guide me. It's helping there. Awesome. Okay, tell us the origin story of the collection of tools we're talking about today. AJ, you wanna jump in here?
I think Sue's very quickly going to have to jump in with me, because this all kind of started with Sue and patterns that she was seeing in her engagements with clients. And clients were asking us, what does good look like? And so we tried to create a framework for defining that, understanding that, analyzing that, inspecting that. So Sue, why don't you tell a little bit about how that first came to be?
Yeah, well, I think it came to be because CX in general is relatively new to the party in terms of a function. And because of that, there's no one right way to do it. It could report to any number of people, could be any type of size team, doesn't correlate with size of company. And that causes misunderstandings, overlaps. There's a lot of ambiguity in terms of what does CX do exactly? And because of that, when we had clients coming to us, they would say things like, can you tell me that I have the right stuff? Or can you please look at my chart? And am I doing the right things? And do I need something else? And let me look at these job descriptions. And it felt disorganized. It didn't feel aligned with your business at all. It was just, okay, we're doing CX things, and here's a big list of things we do. And so you should work with us because we're going to make customers happy. And it just wasn't enough. And we could tell that CX in some organizations had been around for a year or two, and they had to go back to justify what they were doing. And if we look at our latest State of CX Team survey that we did in 2023, 86% of firms are building a CX case of some sort. They're going back to the well. So they need to be organized.
Got it. So a lot of half-baked value propositions, which you would never go on Shark Tank and have it half-baked, or you're never going back on Shark Tank again, are you? That's sometimes it does feel like you only get one chance to get it right. I mean, as you mentioned, things constantly change. And of course, there is always another opportunity. But why not have a leg up to craft the team capabilities, the team positioning, the opportunity to work with stakeholders? And let me just ask, you mentioned there's so many different kinds of CX teams. So is this collection of tools for anybody?
Yeah, it should be for anyone, whether they're recalibrating or they have a blank sheet of paper, because it's designed by objective. It's, what is the organization trying to do with CX? And then you build backwards from there.
I think in the world alongside of this, hey, CX teams are varying size, report to different functions, all of this kind of stuff. It's a real emerging capability in a lot of organizations. But going back to this existential question that Sue and I are always debating, is CX a thing or is it a person? And even though a company has a CX mission, objective, and maybe some employees that are tasked with fulfilling this mission and however they choose to define it and the skills that they have, CX is still undergirded by several capabilities in an organization that we might see as more traditional, right? Product management, you need different types of design expertise, so on and so forth. And so these tools, we try to bring it back to this centralizing mission, which is being able to define, design, and deliver something to market under some sort of charter. So we started to develop objectives, and we'll get into that a little bit more. But I don't know how CX professionals often think about this, or if they're even thinking about this fact that CX is an organizational capability. We need everybody to be able to do that. And in that way, it's a bit of a framework, a mindset, a set of capabilities that have to work in orchestration, in concert, to deliver together. And so we really wanted CX professionals to start taking that point of view on what it is that they've been, you know, quite privileged to be able to handle. And sometimes it doesn't feel that way, but to be an orchestrator, how does that change your perspective on what CX is when you see it from that lens?
And we wanted CX and design to be joined at the hip, as AJ and I often are, because it's a critical part of being able to, you know, actually prototype, test, and take the risk out of these new solutions. We studied, I think, over 200 different organizations, and we found only 5% of them could design, you know, could determine what customers need, design and test solutions, and deliver experiences at the end, even for just one project, not the entire organization. So that in itself was concerning. You know, there needs to be a thread that runs through it to make sure that there's an impact. It's not a set of insights that people aren't absorbing or doing anything with. It's not a lot of activity that isn't getting absorbed back into the organization. So yeah, design is critical to this whole process.
Absolutely. And design often brings a lot of the frameworks that help all these capabilities hang together, right? Because the focus is on the user. So design, capital D, design as a profession versus just the individuals working in that discipline, right? Individuals working in that discipline have varying capabilities, but a centralizing factor of design is human-centered design. A centralizing factor of quality CX is human-centered design, making something for someone else, not ourselves. And so when we get our organizations to orchestrate across these three areas, right, defining or determining what needs to be done, designing what needs to be done, and then delivering it in concert with the customer in mind, that's where the magic is. And a lot of times we see teams just getting into land grabs. We're like, I own this and I own that and I own that. And I always ask people, well, but can you do that? Let's talk about what needs to be done, why it needs to be done, for whom, and then we can talk about who owns it.
Okay, so I'm picturing now a tool with a lot of capabilities to choose from and maybe an option to use your business ambitions to right size your capabilities. And then from there, maybe I'm realizing I need to connect it to design. So maybe something to help with that. I mean, tell me a little bit about what these tools actually are and how you didn't overwhelm yourselves with boiling the ocean.
We talked to over 70 clients and we developed the tools with them. So I have to thank them for working through this with us so we could get a lot of different scenarios into the mix. But the way that they work is, you know, first of all, it's, you know, what's the mission? So the mission is not to build a CX function. The mission is to, you know, we came up with 14 clear objectives that different organizations have, the most common 14. They're either about increasing revenue in that area, or they're about reducing costs and profitability in another area, or they're in about resilience, right? Long-term prospects at the firm. And then finally, we have one objective, you know, two objectives for benchmarking, which some firms, all they want to do is benchmark, fine. But let's right-size the capabilities for what they're trying to do. So the first thing is figuring out what the objective is. And we provide some tools and some guidance in terms of how do you narrow that down. And then we basically have a kit, thinking of it as an equipment, set of equipment, and then an outfitter saying, okay, what you want to do is reduce the cost to serve. Here are the capabilities that you need. Here's why you need them. Here are the foundational capabilities that support that. And then here are the connections you need to make in the organization. So think of it as a set of recipes for each one of the objectives.
And I think we also got to this point with the tools where we were like, well, we can't tell them every single capability that they will eventually need in order to improve loyalty, because eventually that becomes an organizational charter and everybody's working on that, right? So we very, very decidedly were like, okay, we're going to give them the first three that they should really try to, hey, do we have that? Do we not? How do we acquire that? Do we build it over time? You know, how quickly are we looking to move? So the tools are meant to pose that initial get started question and to give you an initial lens. And then we can go from there. But getting started, we all know that that's the hardest thing.
Yeah, we've got the minimum viable capabilities built in there. And the other thing that we've been doing with clients is working backwards, which is, okay, I have a team, I have all these capabilities. What am I equipped to do?
Yes. And what I love about that is that, okay, I can now tell a story about what I actually need in terms of funding, support. You can give me this mandate to go solve all the world's problems, which often seems like is the mandate of a lot of CX leaders, but it doesn't mean that I can do it if you're not going to properly equip me, staff me, give me the right resources. And the storytelling of what's actually needed to accomplish these objectives is often missing. So these tools help you build a story. They help you figure out the data inside your organization. Exist, doesn't exist, to what degree, right? Is it awful? Is it excellent? So maybe we can accomplish this CX objective that you've tasked me with if I can pull together everybody. But me, director level CX leader, maybe I need some executive support to say, we're actually going to move things out of the way so that you can accomplish that mission. Because after all, we asked for it. And that story, it's so difficult to craft for most people on a good day, let alone without now you have these tools. So you can try this, you can be successful, you can craft that storyline, you can show people visual artifacts of what you're talking about and not just spin in circles in a meeting room. So we were really excited about the promise of the tools to be able to help tell the story. And I don't know that we even realized that that's what we were doing, even though we do it all the time, until we have all of these tools and we're like, oh, well, there's the storyline right there of what you need it, why you don't have it, what you're going to be able to do versus not. And so it was a really, I think, happy outcome.
For those who are fortunate to be Forrester clients, I mean, they get access to analysts such as yourselves who are gifted in systems thinking and storytelling. And what you're describing is basically a tool to kind of standardize your approach to helping the clients with the systems thinking and the storytelling to create a customized right-size approach for them. What I'm also hearing is even if you don't have access to these tools, you can use this kind of approach and whatever resources you can scrape together. So you're right. Sometimes you're going to go forwards and sometimes you're going to have to work backwards from what you've inherited, what you already have and realized, maybe the CEO is new and created a new CX mandate, and now's your chance to get it right with what you already have. And so I love this approach. Can you tell me any anonymized client stories where they were exposed to the tools and what their reaction was?
Yeah, well, I can talk about a few of them, but I'll start with a healthcare client and a government client. We had them right after each other, and we had built, there's a new tool that came out in January, which is activity maps, where you can take different parts of the organization, different people in the organization, you can map who's doing what based on an objective. So who's doing the customer research, who's doing insights and analytics, who's doing product design and the like. And these were two sessions right after each other. One was a government entity. The government entity had 11 different groups doing a voice of the customer program, no standardization, different platforms, different surveys, and they were stepping all over each other. They had nobody doing closed loop except this one tiny contact center that was answering people's questions and was burned out. So they certainly weren't leveraging that. We did the same thing right afterwards with a healthcare firm, and the healthcare firm was inundated by, you know, customer research, but they had so many different types of research, nothing was coordinated, nothing was being pulled together. They didn't realize that until we were actually building, we were using the tool and building the map, and they were like, oh, I didn't realize they did that. So that was certainly illuminating to help look at gaps as well as overlaps. I mean, there's a lot of redundancy in organizations. AJ knows this, right? Customer research, people say, hey, I got a survey, I'm doing research, but it's not coordinated or orchestrated. And it's not professional. It's not a professional capability.
I think that's the thing right there when we were talking earlier about like, well, let's decide what needs to be done and then we'll decide who should do it. And who should do it should have a professional capability to do those things. I think we've all been exposed to someone, you know, like having an idea in the shower, writing something on the back of the napkin, and then they're like, can we build this? You know, engineers are like, what? Why do you want us to do that? And then CX professionals are like, whoa, let's consult the journey out, the atlas, and let's see what's really going on with the holistic experience before we just ship this one thing. That's not something without a professional capability in research, design, concepting, user testing. Like, you shouldn't just be proposing something and then shipping it all the way through engineering, right? And that goes back to successful organizations are able to coordinate across these areas, right? Defining problems, designing, and delivering them. These are things that have to be orchestrated in concert. There's a respect for what other people do professionally that has to happen. And Sue's activity maps, I think, really illuminate that. Because whenever you see all of these people doing one thing, And then if everybody looks at it and they're like, oh, all these teams are doing that, you start to see the size, the expertise in those teams, their ability to share out. And I think it gets real clear as to who should probably really, really do that. And those are hard conversations, though. It's kind of like deciding to sunset a product. It can be really uncomfortable, but that's the work. That is the work that organizations have to do, because it's not that people have to lose their jobs or whatever, but we do need to redefine the way that we achieve these capabilities in our organization and who does them.
Yeah, I'm glad you said definition, because I think, AJ, you and I built a dictionary, basically. We defined what each one of these capabilities was so that people could rate, you know, how they performed against those capabilities as opposed to just checking it off. And that's key, too, for, you know, help eliminate ambiguity so people understand what design teams do, what CX teams do. AJ, you and I were recently on a call with a client. We're doing an interview for a report that we're releasing on CX and product management and how they work together. And it felt like the first time that CX and product management got to know each other, I mean, they knew each other, but know what each other did. We could see the light bulbs going off and it was, wow.
Right. And I think these were two leaders who understood the complementary nature of what they were doing. And it was really beautiful, but we don't always take time to have those conversations. And I think they're working it out, but how do you proliferate that desire to work it out across your whole organization without any formal approach to working it out? And these tools are that formalized approach. We're going to work this out. We're going to get everybody in a room and we're going to see how we all fit together, where our gaps are, how we're going to resolve those things with a shared mindset, a shared approach as to what would be the best way to do that, to move through these three phases, to define. How do we better define what users need, customers need? How do we better design for that? How do we better deliver that? Do we have the capabilities? Are those people trained? Are they weak? Are they strong? Can we do this now? Can we do this later? I mean, it poses so many questions for a group of people to begin to tackle. And I know we've talked about in other episodes, Angelina, where we talk about facilitation and workshops. And you'll hear me say a lot that the magic of these tools or activities, methodologies, the magic is in doing them, because that's the conversation, right? It's not necessarily the output. The output helps your storytelling and helps you show others. But the magic is the conversation that happens as you're progressing through these tools. So if you want to get better at what you're doing, if you want to figure this out, use a method. It's a method in itself is almost like an external facilitator. It's not the only facilitator you need, but it facilitates the conversation you've been ignoring, avoiding even. So I think Sue's seen in particular so many stories with clients of where the light bulb comes on and they're just like, the angels descend and there's all of the choir music and all the things, because the elephant that's just been in the room is now visible and can't be ignored.
As I said before, it really is about helping to guide the strategy. But I think there's also something else there, which ties back to effective workshop facilitation, is you're putting something impartial into the conversation. The tool is rational, and we're all coming with our emotions, maybe with our intentions for a land grab. So if we could suggest, again, to those who don't have access to Forrester tools or those that do, think about what the impartial guide you can put in the center of this could be, so that you aren't hitting barriers that are just totally human and real, and the reason we aren't seeing the maturity we'd expect in CX management.
Absolutely. Look for a tool.
And if they're not a Forrester client, the other thing that they can look at is, okay, let's see which way the wind is blowing. So who do they report to? Right. If your CX team reports to sales or marketing, chances are the North Star is going to be revenue growth. How can you help bring in new customers, sell existing customers more? Kind of, can you retain customers? How can you improve adoption? Right. If you report to the contact center, for instance, or operations, it's probably going to be about cost. Right. Can you reduce the cost to serve? If you report to EX or HR, it's going to be more around employee engagement. So understand how the investment happened in the first place. What was the catalyst for CX? And that's going to help you figure out the path forward.
Absolutely. And just to be clear, those more business worded objectives that we tell you to get behind it's not like they're not human centered. I mean, the language is, but they're an objective. It has to be done. We have to make money as a company, right? How you choose to fulfill that objective, through the decisions you make to affect customer experience. That is what we're talking about when it comes to being able to clearly define, design, and deliver something or determine what needs to be made, right? It doesn't mean that you can't have this objective. Imagine, so if it is to decrease calls to the contact center, there are probably a million things that you can solve, right? And of course, we have other reports and tools beyond the ones we're providing in this, in terms of what we're talking about today, but figuring those things out requires you to engage in some sort of definition, determining, discovery, like all of the D's. You have to do that. And then we can prioritize those things based on different criteria. And we can shine a light on what is going to meet things through diverse criteria, you know, for our customers, if it's feasible or not, right? If it's a viable thing for us to do, we can do that work. It doesn't mean that those human-centered things that we may choose to solve or the approach we would take to solving those customer pain points, it doesn't mean that they don't eventually lead to more revenue growth. They absolutely do. So just want to say that because I think sometimes people see the objectives and they're like, hey, I thought we were CX and we're trying to be customer-centered and like hands on hips, the whole thing, right? You are, but you better prove your value to the rest of the business in the mandate that they've given you.
That was Sue Doyle and AJ Joplin talking about tools that they've developed at Forrester to help CX teams in building, strategizing, and doing the things they need to get done. AJ, Sue, thank you so much for joining today.
Sure. Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Always fun.
You can find AJ and Sue on LinkedIn if you have great examples to share with them. And of course, you can find them on Forrester.com. Until next time. And thank you to producers Ellie and Julia, without whom none of this would happen. If you want to get in touch, email us at cxcast@forrester.com. As always, you can find us at Forrester.com or on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to like and subscribe and tune in next time for more CX insights.